Prior to the start of today's show, I'd like to apologise for the fact that as we started recording, reports came out that potentially Odell Beckham's suspension could be overturned. It has since been confirmed by Adam Schefter that the suspension has been upheld, so I apologise for the slightly hysterical nature of the first two or three minutes of this podcast. I promise we don't spend too long on the subject. We do revisit it a couple of times through the show, but it is confirmed against the Minnesota Vikings this weekend. Odell Beckham will not play. Let's get on with the show. To the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours, and the NFL has literally lost it. We're hearing in literally the last 2 minutes from Ron Jaworski that the Odell Beckham suspension has been overturned. It's not confirmed. We'll bring you news as the podcast goes on. We'll preview all the Week 16 games as the entire playoff picture pretty much can be clinched, and we'll talk all about Pro Bowl snubs. This is the Gridiron Show. I reckon one time as a Christmas treat, we should film ourselves doing that dance.
Oh, we really should. Do you mean for next year? Because this is the last show before Christmas.
Yeah, as a post-Christmas treat.
A post-Christmas treat.
A New Year's treat or whatever it'd be.
Hello. Do you mean a New Year's nugget?
A New Year nugget. Why not? Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours. And we have a banger of a show coming up. We're going to preview every single Week 16 game because we love you and it's Christmas and you deserve that in your life.
Yeah, okay.
We're going to review some of them in some more, preview some of them in some more depth than others, obviously. Later on, we may or may not bring you an interview with Saints linebacker Stephon Anthony. The interview is already done and in the can. I'm going to see how long this podcast runs because the main reason we speak to him, obviously the Saints are out of the playoffs and not in the picture. He's had a great rookie season, but his Clemson Tigers are in the semifinals of the playoffs, undefeated this season, had a great college year, so we talked to him all about that. So maybe we'll save that back till next week ahead of those games on New Year's Eve. We'll play it by ear and see how long this show goes, but we may have an interview with Stephon Anthony. We might play it to you next week. And loads of news to talk about. And of course, the Pro Bowl voting happened this week. And to be honest, me and Ollie, and if you've been, we're a fan of the old show and you heard us before, have always rallied against the Pro Bowl, particularly the way it's voted for.
And the kits.
Look, we're fans and we understand that us fans are idiots and we can't read it. And this year, the Pro Bowl snubs, even more so than any other time I've seen in the past. So what we decided to do is to prove that Pro Bowl voting doesn't work. We've made a near all pro quality team from players not going to the Pro Bowl.
And I still think it could win.
So Ollie is going offense on it. I've gone defense. We asked you on Twitter as well, at Gridiron, gridiron-magazine.com as well for more content on there while I'm doing the plugging. So yeah, we've asked you, we got your opinions, we've given our opinions and we've gone through and done all of that. But before we get to anything else and all the nonsense and everything else, we've really got to talk about the fact that in reportedly, literally in the last 20 minutes, Ron Jaworski has said that we know it started about 4 hours ago. Odell Beckham's hearing has seen his suspension for one game overturned. When we last spoke, he hadn't even been suspended. We were speculating over it. A few hours later, he was suspended for a single game. Josh Norman, for his role in the same incident, was fined $26,044, to be specific, for his role in the incidents. I think that was about right. The homophobic slurs apparently haven't been discussed as part of this, and Ron Rivera has said that the Panthers will no longer bring baseball bats to the field. So all of that is kind of rounded up, but massively, despite the fact that Dean Blandino has admitted that Beckham's actions warranted ejection, in a game they have to win, he could be no longer banned for that instance. So that's absolutely crazy. And obviously, the impact of it, I mean, we had a fantastic article, point made by Big T on Twitter. The fact that this week we've also had news that the NFL have reportedly withdrawn funding for a CTE study, according to Outside the Lines, who do some really great investigative journalism work. Who do some really great investigative journalism work. The $30 million grant the NFL handed at NIH 2012, $60 million of which was going to be used for a Boston University study, has now been pulled. So the league consistently claims that head injuries are the top of its list and the most important to it. And then we've had two big bits of news in the last few days which would suggest that that might not be the case.
It's unsurprising. I mean, the way that we, you know, we work within the NFL now, we've been studying it. We hear everything that comes out of the NFL when it comes to head injuries and everything else. Does any of this ever surprise you anymore? And that's isn't that a sad thing?
There's been a lot of talk as well about the Cody Wallace hit on David Bruton. And to be honest, I almost entirely forgot about that hit because we talked so much about Odell Beckham. So I apologise that, that wasn't mentioned on the last podcast. But he's not going to be banned for that either. Just going to see a suspension. There's a part of me that understands that the NFL need to stick within their remit, particularly with what's happened previously over the last couple of years, and need to make sure that because it's a first-time offence, they stick with what the precedent they've set out is and what the rules state and everything else. But as lots of people said at the time, I think you said on the last show, as I think Josh Norman said himself, the tape doesn't lie. And anyone can see that that head hit was dangerous. And the idea has been overturned. And look, what we will do is we'll drop this here now. And at the end of the podcast, we'll just pick it up and we'll check in. It's going to be like an hour or so later to see what news there is from whether or not he has been suspended. So at the moment, we're hearing reports that he has had his suspension overturned. It's not been 100% confirmed yet. Depending on who you look at on Twitter, they're saying different things. So hopefully in an hour, we'll have more of an answer on that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Brad Wing has come out. he's not come out.
Wow.
But he's,
that is big news.
But the punter for the New York Giants has come out and said that a practice player was holding a bat. Beckham said, "Why aren't you playing?" And the practice player said, "I'm the reason you're not playing today and on other days as well." End quote. So, look, that could be part of what is going to be heard at this hearing. And, you know, he was provoked or whatnot. You could see the reaction, and the reaction is over the top, really, for whatever was said to him beforehand. You know, he's a bit like Zinedine Zidane and Marco Materazzi.
Nice.
It's a bit like that.
Excellent work. The other big bit of news that happened in the NFL over the last couple of days, and a man who we got a chance to interview when he was playing over in London last year, an absolute gentleman and one of the true greats to play at the position. I mean, when you announce your decision to retire, and maybe the two of the greatest defensive backs of all time in Ronnie Lott and in Rod Woodson come out and claim that you are in the top three, basically, with those two guys, all-time defensive backs, then you know you've had a great career, as Charles Woodson announced he's going to retire at the end of the season. Look, lovely man when we met him, incredible player. The way that after 30 he switched from being a pure corner to being a corner safety, the way that he's developed in that position, the fact that he's got all these awards that he's had lavished on him. You know, he's a guy who, when he hit the free agent market in 2006, sat as a free agent for a number of weeks, and nobody at that point would have expected he'd go on to have a Hall of Fame career. People now see him as a nailed-on, first-ballot guy. There's only so much love we can really give him, and actually, he's a guy who's played the most games. I think he's the second most games all-time after Darrell Green, formerly of Washington. And we've actually reached out to Darrell Green to speak to him about the fact that Washington are coming over next year, and had a couple of nice emails backwards and forwards. So that's an interview we hope to bring in the off-season, and we'll ask him about Charles Woodson as well. But what a player, and I'm sure everyone would agree when we say that, like, he's going to be much missed in the league. And I'm sure whether he goes on to coaching, whether he goes on to announcing, whatever he does, he's going to be amazing, because he is amazing.
I reel a few things off. Super Bowl champion,
yeah.
9 times Pro Bowl.
It's a shame he has to be the Super Bowl championship with Green Bay, but there we go.
How dare you. 4 times All-Pro, 3 times first team All-Pro, that is NFC champion, AFC champion. He was the Heisman Trophy winner, a national champion in college.
Was he like the first defensive player to win the Heisman as well?
Something like that. It's madness.
And he beat Peyton Manning to it, most importantly.
Which is wonderful. First team All-American. He's second at all time for interceptions going back for touchdown. Pick sixes. Otherwise known in the trade. He's joint first with 13 all-defensive touchdowns. I mean, this guy is a living legend, guaranteed Hall of Famer. I love him.
And what I really love is what we're hearing is on the Raiders Chargers game, which is Thursday night football, Friday morning football, Christmas morning football. So for those of you who are waiting up to see it here, Santa coming down the chimney, the click clack of Rudolph's hooves on your rooftop, then you'll get to watch Charles Woodson in what I think was his final home game as a Raider. I think they're on the road in the final week, and he may line up at wide receiver.
incredible.
It's not something they've absolutely ruled out. Bill Musgrave has said it's been in discussions pretty much since the start of the season about the potential of lining him up on the offense. It's something that he did earlier in his career, something he did towards the end of his time in the maize and blue at Michigan, racked up more than 300 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns in his Heisman Trophy season. Just a wonderful, wonderful player. Can't say enough good things about him.
Wouldn't that be amazing if he did get a touchdown as an offensive player?
Would absolutely love that.
You know how we love on Gridiron players doing things that are not becoming of their position. A bit like a quarterback recovering a fumble or an offensive big fat guy scoring a touchdown. Fat guy touchdowns. Well, what about a cornerback being a wide receiver? Wow.
More and more, just so you know, more and more and more reports coming out of Odell Beckham Jr.'s suspension being overturned. Nothing confirmed by the league yet, but more and more. And Adrian Peterson, who said that the suspension wasn't warranted. AP, I think you're someone who probably should keep your mouth shut on this matter.
Always, AP. Always keep it shut. Forever and ever more.
Coming up later in the show, as we said earlier, we're going to be going through our Pro Bowl, our Pro Bowl snubs, all pro team. And I think you'll find it's a great team that we've put together. Ollie on the offense, me on the defense. But week 16 is going to be absolutely vital to the NFL. Pretty much every scenario can be. In fact, I think every scenario can be decided this weekend. Bar NFC North seeding, I think it is. Which, what's ridiculous about this weekend is that if the favourites win in every game and the AFC wildcard picture gets decided, the Sunday night late game next weekend could be the Vikings against the Packers in a game to decide who has home field advantage when the two of them play each other the following week in the playoffs.
Incredible.
Because they'll be guaranteed to be the fourth and fifth seed already.
Third and sixth.
Yeah, whatever it works out to be. The third and sixth seed, because the Seahawks will be guaranteed to be playing the rubbish NFC East team. The whole thing is
the NFC
utterly,
what team?
Yeah, NFC disgrace. I do apologise. Yeah. So there is a possibility that we could have that flexed into the Sunday night game because it's going to decide who plays at home the following week when they face each other again.
Amazing. And it's, in any case, it's at Lambeau Sunday week anyway. So, wow.
Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. But let's go through. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about who will clinch what this weekend and preview some of those games. And we'll run through the games that are obviously playoff relevant first of all. AFC or NFC to start, Ollie?
AFC.
Lovely, because it's a much more interesting division right now. The New England Patriots currently sit in the one seed, and they will clinch the one seed if they win this weekend or if they tie and the Bengals either lose or tie. They face the New York Jets in New York, and this really is not a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination. The Jets at 9-5 have been impressive. They're desperate, particularly over recent weeks. Ryan Fitzpatrick has stepped up to the plate in a big way, and they will be desperate to win here because they're in the AFC wildcard picture themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially losing to them so badly earlier on in the year as well. The Patriots are getting a bit of their mojo back. Rob Gronkowski's back. Danny Amendola. He came off with a slight strain and he's been limited practice so far this week. He'll be back. James White is getting more touches on the ball. You've got all of those defensive players in for the New England Patriots as well, many of which have been picked for the Pro Bowl, which is by the by. But Chandler Jones, who we spoke about on last week's pod, I really, really like, and the way that he's playing at the moment. This is a really, really good game from the Patriots side. And when you look at the New York Jets side, some of the stuff that they've got two of the best wide receivers currently going in the NFL, in Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker. Chris Ivory's starting to get a little bit of mojo back. And yeah, as you said, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's starting to look a bit more like an NFL quarterback, which isn't going to make too many mistakes.
Because we can't not play it. And that's my kind of feeling on this, is whilst I'm leaning towards taking the Patriots just because it's the Patriots, the injuries still continue to be an issue. And if they're going to lose a third game this year and keep things interesting, I think this is the most obvious one for them to lose. I think what Todd Bowles has done this year has been absolutely phenomenal. He deserves a huge amount of praise for what he's done since joining them as head coach. I think they're good on the defensive side of the ball. the quality of the receivers and what they do with Rob Gronkowski is going to be absolutely huge. And actually, the Patriots are already talking about whether they're going to be resting players or not for both this week and for week 17. So this is one of the most fascinating matchups of the weekend. Ollie Hunter, who'd you got?
I want the Jets, but I've got the Patriots because I think it'd be really Jetsy for them to lose.
I too have taken the Patriots, although I've got what, like a 3-game lead at the top of the picks league on gridiron-magazine.com. So I'll stick safe. I'm just letting people know out there, listen to what my picks are. Maybe pick against me in those, in these sorts of games. If you want to try and make up that lead, I'm listening and talking to you, Sandbox.
Pick or twist, Sandbox.
Pick or twist. I like that in a big way. The 11-3 Cincinnati Bengals travelling to the 10-4 Denver Broncos, who of course suffered that horrendous loss last weekend. Cincinnati will clinch the AFC North division with a win this weekend, or if Pittsburgh lose, and they'll also clinch a first round bye with a win. For the Broncos, they clinch the AFC West division with a win plus a KC loss, and they clinch a playoff spot. It's all sorts of things. Basically, with a win and a loss for the Jets or the Steelers or KC, clinches them a playoff spot. I mean, it's the West, if it's KFC. It's KFC that loses. The Kentucky Chicken Chiefs. The Kentucky Fried Chiefs, yeah. The Kansas City Chief Kentucky Fried something or another.
Just get back to where you were.
I don't know if I can.
I don't know if you could, because you've completely lost me.
Of
Safe
course.
To say, there are a lot of permutations hanging on this game, guys.
The,
loads.
The Bengals have AJ McCarron under centre, of course. He looked workmanlike against the 49ers, had that one really good stretch in the final 7 or 8 minutes of the second quarter. For the Broncos, we found out this week that after some consternation over who was going to be starting at quarterback, Peyton Manning is going to be sitting. Brock Osweiler will be starting again. Somebody tweeted us to point out that Peyton Manning still leads interceptions in the league by 2, despite the fact that he's now sat 5 games.
Who's second? Rivers?
Oh, who cares? It's only about Manning.
But still, that's amazing.
Which is statistician for I haven't checked. I'm sorry.
I think it's Rivers. But yeah, Manning. I think I heard somewhere that he's still the 5th worst quarterback in the league.
Oof.
Out of all of them. That's which is incredible. Good. That I'm sure. Who would be below him? EJ Manuel. Jimmy Clausen, perhaps. There are some terrible quarterbacks out there. One of them's Peyton Manning. Incredible.
I would... I'm looking at this game. Sorry. I'm getting fantasy football trades coming in at the same time. I'm looking at this game and I say, I look at the running game of both teams. Obviously, we know how good this Broncos defense is. They're ranked first overall against the rush. Bengals 8th against the rush. So you can't imagine a huge amount of running. In pass defense, Broncos are number one. Bengals still in the top half of the league. Basically, what I think is this is going to be an incredibly low-scoring game in Mile High. It's meant to be pretty cold, but not as cold as it normally is at this time of year. So expect teams to try and go to the run game. Expect a lot of three and outs, a lot of defensive stoppages, and a game that's won by, 10-7 or something along those lines.
Ugh.
And in that sort of game, I'm going to take the Denver Broncos because I think Brandon McManus has the ability to nail them from about 60 yards when he's in Mile High. The rookie kicker. So I'm taking the Broncos to move to 11-4 and the Bengals to drop to 11-4. And for that AFC picture to get ever the more interesting.
For week 17, which is what you and I want.
Desperately.
However, I think the Bengals will do it. I think AJ McCarron, with an extra week with those receivers, learning that playbook, bit of coaching from Andy Dalton on the sideline as well. I've got a sneaky suspicion. You've got to look at the running game. Okay. That defense is fantastic at from the Broncos at Mile High. But Gio Bernard, Jeremy Hill, they're much better than CJ Anderson and Ronnie Hillman. And I think that could be where it's decided. I'm going Bengals.
Now, looking at the Steelers, they travel to Baltimore on Sunday. Obviously, one of the best rivalries in the league over the past 10 or so years. This year, the Steelers at 9-5 and one of the best offenses in the league right now. The Ravens all the way at a lowly 4-10, although they've not been bad through the air, even when they've had the terrible quarterback play they've had in recent weeks. Pittsburgh will clinch if they win and the New York Jets lose, which they're against the Pats. That's very much a possibility. And they still have a chance in the AFC North if the Bengals lose as well, going into the final game of the season. It's very difficult for me to look beyond the Steelers this weekend. They're back. They're fighting fit. D'Angelo Williams continues to look good at running back. For the Ravens, whilst their rush defense has actually been really good this year,
yeah.
And they've had some they've had some decent pickups in the on the offensive side of the ball. We've seen Kamar Aiken look really good in recent weeks. I think just overall, the Ravens have been very down this year. The Steelers' offense will get churning again, and they'll win a tighter game than recent weeks, but they'll still do this by at least a touchdown, I think.
This has got the potential, I think, to be a Steelers blowout. I really do, because that Steelers' offense is insane.
Mm.
Or it could be a tight Baltimore win.
You reckon the Ravens have a chance? The Steelers are fancied by 10.
Well, but when it's a divisional game, you're in Baltimore. Baltimore don't have much, they don't have anything really to play for apart from pride. And against the Pittsburgh Steelers, we know how close those cities are. We've driven between them. And the pride is so huge there. It could be one which really rallies, and I hate to use the word because another broadcaster uses it and it annoys me, but galvanizes that team and that stadium. I'm going a Steelers win, but do not be surprised, and mark my words, that it could be...
Is this another guy from the Southwest?
Yeah, mark my words, it could be a Baltimore sneaky victory by 2 or 3. But I'm going Steelers.
Okay, so...
by about 15.
the rest of the AFC playoff picture, Chiefs and the Texans obviously still in the mix. For the Chiefs, they are looking for a wild card spot, and they will clinch that spot if they win and either the Jets or Pittsburgh lose. I'm getting the indication from Ollie. Don't worry, it's coming, buddy. Just 2 months ago, this team had fallen to a 1-5 start. They came into London at 2-5, left us at 3-5, and this weekend they get to face the league worst Cleveland Browns to see if they can extend that winning streak to 9 straight games. They've averaged 29.8 points down that run, whilst allowing 12.3 in that undefeated skid, and they have the 7th best rush defence in the league. The one area the Browns actually looked half decent last week with Isaiah Crowell getting going for the first time in some time. The Browns at 3-11, the Chiefs at 9-5. This does not even look like a footballing contest. The line is set at 12.5 points, and I think the Chiefs blow the line. This is going to be
generous,
a big home win.
I think they're being really generous on the Browns there. Huge.
It's almost 2 touchdowns, and we're considering it generous.
Oh, it's huge. I think this could be something like 40-7 Chiefs over the Browns. I love the Chiefs. Love what they're doing on the ground. Sha'Kendrick West, Spencer Ware, whoever else they manage to plug in. Love all of that stuff. I'm going Chiefs.
And then finally, in the AFC South, and we can actually see both of our divisions of disgrace with a winning record team. By the end of this weekend, and then obviously potentially guaranteeing the team is at least 500. As the Texans, currently at 7-7, leading the AFC South, travel to the 3-11 Tennessee Titans. 4 quarterbacks have finished with victories this year for the Texans. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Wow.
Of their 7 wins. And they're unsure if it'll be Brian Hoyer or Brandon Whedon this weekend, whilst the Titans look like they're going to have Zach Mettenberger under centre. The Texans will clinch it with a win or a tie, and the Colts lose in Miami, a scenario that many would have envisioned when they opened at 1-4. TJ Yates suffered that torn ACL last week, which is why we've got this quarterback conversation going on. If Hoyer can't go, Brandon Whedon will make his first start for Houston after starting 2 games in Dallas in place of Romo. Whedon to do it in Tennessee. I think the Texans go 8-7, and we get a team at least with 500 winning the South this year.
I don't know. Whedon's terrible when he starts. He's awful.
He's
terrible full stop, but he doesn't win when he starts. But then you've got Mettenberger.
I think Zach Mettenberger is one of the better backups in the NFL.
I'm going Tennessee.
It's not saying a lot in a season where there's been a lot of backup players.
A load of backup players.
Do you know what? The Cowboys would kill to have had Zach Mettenberger this year.
They really would have.
I'm not saying he would have taken them to the playoffs, but he would have made them much more competitive in the terrible NFC.
With that gun.
Yeah,
with that gunner. With the gun.
Big old but incredibly inaccurate arm.
Bang.
So that's the AFC playoff picture. Obviously, the Colts are still in it as well in the AFC South, but we'll get to those games in the kind of any other business section. Let's talk about the NFC. And at the top of the NFC, Carolina can clinch the number one seed with a win this weekend or an Arizona loss. And, oh, it's all right because they're going to the 7-7, lost whatever it is, 7 of the last 9 game Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, no one knows because they're so up and down. It's so inconsistent. They're really odd.
They finally pulled out a win last weekend in Jacksonville where nobody expected them to. But does anyone really think that a rolling Cam Newton can't shut this Atlanta team down and absolutely hammer them? For some reason, I don't know why this week, I've decided that betting lines are my new thing. It's a 7-point it's a 7-point line for Carolina this weekend. Putting a banned baseball bat aside and Josh Norman nonsense and everything else, they've had a couple of tight wins recently. The 38-35 over the Giants, the tight game with the Saints. Is there anything that suggests to you that this game with the Falcons could be equally tight?
The Falcons have managed, they managed to win against the Jags, and the Jags are perennially as up and down as the Falcons. But I think the Panthers will be tightened up. They will be more concentrated on the fact that they are shipping all of those points. The Panthers should have Jonathan Stewart back. It's still up and down as we still speak, but I'm going Panthers by at least a couple of scores because I think they are on such a roll. Cam Newton is playing so damn well and going up against that terrible, apart from Desmond Trufant, who I think makes a sneaky appearance in your...
Oh, spoiler alert!
Whoop, whoop, whoop! But
I didn't tell you that...
You cannot put that. You can't have that at all. That's not even comparable.
Yeah, sorry. That was a big Star Wars spoiler, which I've obviously beeped out now. But
you better have done that. That's one of the... I know that... Whoa!
Stop it, Ollie. No more Star Wars talk until later when we get your review. Look, the fact is that when these two teams faced earlier in the season, as in 2 weeks ago, it was 38-0 to the Panthers. Devonta Freeman managed 12 carries for 40 yards. Julio Jones was kept, well, obviously out of the end zone, there were no points, but kept quiet as well. Cam Newton was phenomenal, went for 75% completion, 265 yards, 3 touchdowns. The Atlanta, if they're not able to run the ball, cannot get anything going whatsoever. They've got nothing behind Julio Jones. I think that a 7-point line is very kind to the Atlanta Falcons, and the Panthers go 15-0 this weekend. Exciting Woo! Stuff. Let's just have an Odell Beckham check-in, as Alan M says to us on Twitter. What a farce. Any confirmation that Odell Beckham's ban has been overturned? There's been a lot of people saying it's going to happen.
Well, scroll back up. That's an hour old.
It's a mix. It's a big mix. Maurice Jones-Drew says, don't suspend him. It's a contact sport.
It's a great picture as well.
It's not a contact sport where you're meant to attack people. Basically, we still don't know if it's happened yet. We'll come back to it in a little while. One of the games...
The funny thing is, people that are listening to this... will know.
Yeah. Maybe I should edit that bit down a little bit.
Carry on for our live reaction if it ever happens during the show. The ultimate tease.
The Arizona Cardinals face the Green Bay Packers in what is the game of the weekend for me. In Arizona, this is an absolutely huge one. The Packers at 10-4, and the Cardinals at 12-2. The Cardinals will clinch a bye with a win, or a tie, in fact. The Packers will clinch the NFC North if they win and Minnesota lose. Also, basically, Minnesota have to have a worse result than them. I hate it when people bring tie into tiebreakers because it so rarely happens. Basically, they need to beat Minnesota's performance this weekend to clinch the NFC North and to stop it from coming down to that game next weekend. Ollie, are you feeling confident that you can win in the desert?
Yes, I am. Ooh. And I'm not often confident about the Green Bay Packers, but some of my reasoning is centered around the Arizona secondary, which has lost Tyrion Mathieu. Is that his name, Matthew?
I quite like how you said it, yeah.
Yeah, it's like he's from Game of Thrones, Tyrion Mathieu. he's a leader, he's the organiser. One of the main things about Green Bay and their wide receivers, they haven't been able to manage to get any space, any separation. Without someone like him organising the secondary, although it does have Patrick Peterson, I think that does give a slight edge to Green Bay in that respect. I'm worried about Green Bay's rushing, Eddie Lacy, James Starks, but I am quietly confident. Yeah,
I genuinely think that's fascinating. I'm
shut up.
Well, look, we know that the Cardinals last year, they had a real issue with the fact that Castle Palm went down, missed 10 games. They went 2-4 after a 9-1 start and collapsed, then lost the wild card game to a Carolina team with a losing record. This year, them and Carolina have a chance to secure the bye this weekend. I think that they will do exactly that. David Johnson, so impressive last weekend to keep him rolling. And obviously, Tyrann Mathieu is a huge loss at the safety position. But what we talked about earlier this week with the Cardinals depth chart, and it looks like he's going to be back this weekend, is that on the other side of that safety conversation, the man who has done so well for them is Rashard Johnson. And Rashard Johnson is like the quarterback of that defense. And whilst Tyrann Mathieu, what's amazing about him is he can line up at outside linebacker, he can line up at safety, he can line up at nickel corner, he can rush the passer, he can work in coverage. He's one of those guys who plays all over the field. I just think they've got the depth elsewhere. You know, DJ Swearinger can play more snaps, Justin Bethel can play more snaps, Gerard Powers can play more snaps. And I
suppose they're fresh as well.
Yeah.
Coming in fresh.
Rashard Johnson coming back and being able to run that defense against a Packers team whose play calling has been somewhat predictable this year. Mm-hmm. And with the depth they've got there, I think they've got enough to handle it without him, even though he is clearly one of the best players in the league.
Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, you've just killed my buzz. Yeah, cheers for that.
I'm really, honestly, sorry about that. The problem is
once again, what is it with your insincerity whilst you're reading a screen at the same time? You're an absolute disgrace.
The Packers' defense have looked better in recent weeks, and whilst we're doing some little teases for later, there might be a Packers defensive lineman who makes an appearance on my Pro Bowl snubs all pro list. But
was it Mike Daniels?
Damn it. But Arizona ranks 7th in overall total defense. The Green Bay offense haven't impressed recently, and I think the Cardinals win this, and actually I kind of think they win it comfortably.
No, I've got Green Bay winning it by a touchdown.
You're wrong, but there we go.
Look, it's rose-tinted spectacles.
We've mentioned it already. There's a couple of teams involved in this playoff game, though. Minnesota playing the New York Giants. The New York Giants, maybe with Odell Beckham. Should we go back to Twitter? No, that didn't really work last time. The Giants travel to Minnesota, maybe with their star receiver. They need a win.
Maybe not.
To have any chance of winning the NFC East. They have to win this weekend, hope that, and then go into that final game with a chance of clinching that playoff berth. The Minnesota Vikings have a chance to clinch here. With a win, they clinch a playoff spot, or an Atlanta loss, or a Seattle win. All of those. So overall, it's very likely that they're going to be making the playoffs this weekend. The main thing is, it's in their hands. They need a win.
Do you know what I love about this? It's the second worst passing offense going up against the worst passing defense.
Amazing.
What's going to happen? I don't know. It's going to be a ground game. Vikings win tight. I don't want that to happen. I'd like the Giants to win, but hey, that's what will happen.
I think it might be a ground game. It's basically, it's a huge amount down to whether Odell Beckham plays, because the Vikings are much better in that front seven. And again, a couple of players going to appear in my list later. The Giants have nobody to run the ball, really. So that wouldn't be a surprise at all.
Although Rashard Jennings got 100 yards for the first time this season last week.
He will not repeat that. I am taking the Vikings at home.
I have also taken the Vikings at home.
So clinch a playoff berth. Obviously the most intriguing of all the games this weekend, that if the home team can get a win here and somehow the Giants can get a win over in Minnesota, then we could end up the weekend with a three-way tie at 7-8 atop of the NFC disgrace, as Washington travel to Philadelphia. They're 7-7. Philadelphia are 6-8. Obviously Washington, if they move to 8-7, will have won the NFC disgrace ahead of next weekend. Kirk Cousins, previously turnover prone, brilliant in recent weeks. Cousins threw for an average 237 yards. He's thrown 6 touchdowns. He's been great recently.
You know what he's done as well? He's trying to trademark. You like that? Do you like that?
Does that mean we wouldn't be able to play it anymore?
No, we'd still play.
You like that? You like that? I imagine he'd put it on t-shirts, etc. What I meant to say, I was reading his old stats. He's thrown 276 yards per game, 16 touchdowns, only 3 picks, as his team has won 5 of the last 8. When he comes up against a team with a poor pass defense, he's been absolutely brilliant recently. I think he's won 5 of 6 when he's faced a team with a pass defense in the bottom half of the league. The Eagles have exactly that. I'm taking Washington to win on the road and clinch the NFC disgrace.
I'm taking the Eagles, and this is why. They tend to win when you least expect it.
When they're absolutely desperate.
Yeah, and they're exactly. When it's just about that time where, ooh, Chip Kelly could get sacked. I think he might get sacked at the end of this season anyway.
Nah, you're crazy.
Oh, but he should do. They've been terrible this year.
Back-to-back 10-6 seasons, it would be ridiculous to sack him.
They've been awful this year. No. All that money spent letting go of players, bringing in Kiko Alonso, who clearly hasn't worked.
If they're going to win this game, they're going to win it on the ground.
Sack him.
Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles and goal line work. Ryan Matthews has played really well over the last couple of weeks. Washington ranked 28th against the run after having a really good start to the season. But the player I think is the X factor in this game and has been in recent weeks. 204 yards, 3 touchdowns over the last 2 games. That is Jordan Reed. The Eagles not good against the tight end. Jordan Reed is going to kill it this weekend again, and the Washington team are going to win.
Little spoiler, he may make an appearance on the...
Stop spoiling it! We're ruining it entirely.
I know.
Look, there are 7 games left to discuss from this weekend, a couple of which have some playoff implications. For example, the Seahawks, because they're in the playoffs and it will dictate where they're going to finish. But we're going to cover those off very briefly in a short while. Let's have a quick check-in on Odell Beckham Watch. I feel like I'm at a really s*** 90s rave.
Yeah.
Basically, it hasn't been confirmed either way yet. So let's keep an eye on it as we move into our All-Pro Pro Bowl snubs lists. Is that name too convoluted?
I like it. Say it again.
Our All-Pro Pro Bowl snubs list. This is a list of people because it's an absolute farce looking at who it is in the Pro Bowl who hasn't made it, because it's based mostly on fan voting. There are so many good players who have been snubbed. It's the thing people complain about every year. The Pro Bowl as a game in general, since they started playing it before the Super Bowl and therefore losing all the players from the teams in the Super Bowl, is a bit of a farce anyway. And to prove our point that we think it's a bit of a farce, we've decided to pick the best team we possibly can from players snubbed from this year's Pro Bowl. Are you ready, Ollie Hunter?
I'm ready.
I wasn't quite doing it in the Gladiator's voice, but I feel like I should have done. Oi! Are you ready?
Ready!
Willie! Are you ready? Heads or tails?
Tails.
Heads. Defense goes first, because everyone loves defense.
I'm sorry, guys.
So we asked you on Twitter about this as well, and I was given the defensive side of the ball. So here is my defensive lineup of players snubbed from this year's Pro Bowl. Playing a 3-4, I've included a third corner for nickel situations, and there's a couple of players I've kind of jammed into a 3-4 system because I know their talent would work
there. Fine, fine.
At nose tackle has to be Linval Joseph. We've talked about him on this podcast this year. There's a period in November where no defensive player was more valuable in the league. His work on the ground this year has been phenomenal. Ridiculous he's not in there. Simon Clancy, friend of the show, regular, also pointed him out on Twitter when we asked. I think he might be the best run-stopping central tackle in the league.
We say regular. When was the last time we spoke to Simon?
Yeah, well, I spoke to him on the Five Live last weekend, but whatever.
Right.
You mentioned it already. The defensive ends in my 3-4 scheme, one of them has to be Mike Daniels. Mike Gudgeon on Twitter pointed it out and said that the stats don't show just how disruptive he is. You can tell he's a superstar. He's just been paid like a superstar. 4-year, $42 million extension. Clay Matthews obviously has the big name, but Daniels has been Green Bay's best defensive player this year. I'd take Gerald McCoy out for him, or maybe even Chandler Jones. That's not really popular with the Pats fans.
I wouldn't take Chandler Jones. I think they're very similar players. I think Chandler Jones has been fantastic, but Mike Daniels has been brilliant this year.
Yeah, Mike Daniels has been unbelievably good. And then the other defensive end, and I know he's traditionally a 4-3 defensive end, but he's so dominant passing the rusher. I'm taking Cliff Averill in my All-Pro Pro Bowl team. Linebackers, 4 of them, obviously, in the 3-4 system.
Obvs.
Let's start off with another Viking, Anthony Barr, outside linebacker. Yep. He rushes the passer. He eludes blockers in the run game to make tackles. He's a difference maker in coverage. He alternates sacking quarterbacks and covering tight ends. He's the NFC's equivalent of Jamie Collins, who we love at the Patriots. And Collins was rightly rewarded with a Pro Bowl position. The outside linebacker position is absolutely loaded this year, understandably. But I'd probably take him over DeMarcus Ware, purely because DeMarcus Ware has only been healthy 8 games. DeMarcus Ware, he's in there for name value, and because when he is on the field, he is a complete difference maker, but his health means I want to take the young man Barr. Inside, Lavonte David, snub because he's a 4-3 in linebacker in an era when 3-4 guys are taken. He leads Tampa Bay in tackles with 126, pass breakups with 12, interceptions with 3. Tackles are the fourth most in the NFL. And in a four-year career, although he's never made the Pro Bowl, he has been named All-Pro before. He's the only player in the NFL in that span with at least 500 tackles, 10 sacks, and 5 interceptions.
Wow.
He's a ridiculously good player, Lavonte David. I love him. He should be in the Pro Bowl. And the other side is Sean Lee. I don't like putting Sean Lee in there because basically Richard Graves made a big point of this.
Do you know what, though? I thought about it. And I think he should be in there. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah, he is brilliant. He has a lot of similarities to Anthony.
But I understand why you wouldn't want to pick him in, because of Richard Graves.
A lot of similarities to Anthony Barr because of his versatility. Transition from middle linebacker to outside in a 4-3 defense this year, but that only highlighted his playmaking ability even more. When Lee is at his very best, there are a few linebackers in the league as good as him. And when he's in that Dallas team, he makes them so much better. And the final of my linebackers is Derek Johnson. Talon Graf pointed him out on Twitter. Look, one of the unintended consequences of playing on one of the league's best defenses is that you get overlooked when the end of season awards comes around. Obviously, people want to talk about Tamba Harley. He's in there. Obviously, people want to talk about Justin Houston. He's in there. But Derek Johnson has been brilliant this year.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with you. Justin Houston, obviously injured at the moment, but he could come back. Is that right?
Yeah, there's some hope he'll be back in time for the postseason. A couple of other linebackers who got some love on Twitter. Connor Barwin wasn't a bad shout. Again, versatility is key for him. Tenniel Green tweeted the Jacks linebackers should get some love. Smith and Poz have 242 combined tackles in 2015. Clay Matthews has 258 over the last 5 seasons.
Yeah.
It's a weird comparison for him to make, but they have been good this year, the linebackers in Jacksonville. The four guys I've picked as individuals have been brilliant.
What about Vontaze Burfict?
Vontaze Burfict.
Who I really like from the Bengals.
I absolutely adore Vontaze Burfict, but it's a fitness thing again. Since he's come back into the league, the Bengals have been, I think, in a top 10 run defense, a top 12 pass defense in the time since he's been back. If he's playing over 16 games, he's an all-pro linebacker. Mm-hmm. But he missed the first 7 or 8 games of the season. It's very difficult to put him on that basis. Safety was really difficult. Just to give you some of the safeties that miss out, Devin McCourty, Harrison Smith, Malcolm Jenkins, all of whom should consider not going to the Pro Bowl, a massive snub.
And you haven't snubbed them.
Snubbed them off our snub list.
Oh, my God.
But the guys that we've picked are real clear favourites. Free safety, Kurt Coleman from the Carolina Panthers. Now, I know that 10 Panthers are already going to Hawaii, but it should have been 11. He'll probably make it because of Tyrann Mathieu's injury. But his 7 interceptions is second in the league this season. His 9 other pass deflections, which is 3rd amongst safeties. Sam, to point out on Twitter, his 7 interceptions are only 2nd to Reggie Nelson. He's been an absolute beast this year. Kurt Coleman, definitely in there for me. And it's strong safety, and this is the most ridiculous snub of all the defensive players. It has to be Rashard Jones.
Yeah, this one actually makes me sick.
Yeah.
He's the only player on the Dolphins that's any good whatsoever.
Unsurprisingly, Simon Clancy pointed this one out on Twitter, but Mike White said as well, and feels like he doesn't get the national media attention. He's playing on not a very good team. This could all count, but let me just give you some stats. The 3 strong safeties who are going, Eric Berry, Cam Chancellor, Charles Woodson. Eric Berry has 52 tackles, 2 interceptions, no sacks, no touchdowns. Cam Chancellor, 74 tackles, no sacks, 2 interceptions, no touchdowns. Charles Woodson, 65 tackles, no sacks, 5 interceptions, impressive, no touchdowns.
So that's why Charles Woodson's in. So you can let him be in, yeah?
And you want Eric Berry there because he's the great story.
Yeah.
Right? Rashard Jones, 124 tackles, 50 more than any other strong safety going.
Sorry,
two
have you
sacks.
Read that wrong?
No. I have read that exactly right. Wow. 124 tackles, 2 sacks. That's 2 more than anyone else going. 5 interceptions equal with Charles Woodson and 2 touchdowns, 2 more than anyone else. The numbers do not lie. Rashard Jones should be a Pro Bowl player. And if he's not in the All-Pro starting lineup, that would be ridiculous. It should be him and Tyrann Mathieu as the All-Pro starting safeties.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there.
It made me genuinely angry. And I'm not a Dolphins fan at all.
And you've got yourself wound up about it again.
I have again, haven't I? At corner, I said I took 3 because I wanted to take a slot corner as well. Darius Slay, I think, has been brilliant, as Rich points out, a shutdown corner for weeks now and helped Detroit out of a hole in a big way. I think the fact that he's risen to some prominence over recent weeks is probably why he misses out over the whole season. Ronald Darby, the rookie out of Florida State, has Marcus Peters has gone. And we love Marcus Peters. He's been great on that Chiefs defense. But he's gone because he's had lots of interceptions. That's the main reason he makes it there. But when you look at Ronald Darby's numbers, he's got the same number of passes defended with 13. He surrendered three fewer touchdowns than Marcus Peters. He surrendered 343 fewer yards and on only 19 fewer targets. He should be in there if Marcus Peters is in there, basically. Clancy will hate this, but he's rated sixth amongst corners on Pro Football Focus. Yeah, he's a great player.
Yeah.
And then finally, Desmond Trufant. I mean, for me, this is maybe more about talent than quality this season, but he has given up something like two touchdowns in the last 4 years, dominant in man coverage, very good in zone, and this is a guy who has had very, very little support from pass rush. It's an underrated part of a corner's game, but the Falcons have got the fewest sacks this season, and that does not make your life easy for a corner. Finally, just a couple of other mentions we had off Twitter. I mentioned Connor Barwin, I mentioned Jacksonville. Oh, Brandon Williams, the nose tackle out of Baltimore. Ben Braddock said that. He's a very good shout, Ben, but it had to be. It just had to be Linval Joseph at my nose tackle position. So that is my starting 11/12 on defense for our All-Pro Pro Bowl.
You've missed out a couple of players.
Go on.
Sam Shields.
Have I missed out all Packers, by chance? The other one going to be Julius Peppers.
Ha-ha Clinton Dix.
Sam Shields has been better than I've ever seen him this season, but that doesn't mean he's going to make my...
I think Ha-ha's been great this year, but it's a homer pick. Homer pick. Right, quarterbacks.
The main point is nobody from the 49ers is getting in there. Even though Navarro Bowman is actually going.
Yeah, aren't there two in there?
Joe Staley as well. Joe Staley, understandably, he is one of the best left tackles in the league.
Quarterbacks.
And I think let's start less sexy. Let's start with your offensive line because let's get those guys out of the way.
Get those guys out the way. So offensive line, I like Andrew Norwell, Carolina Panthers. I think he's looked really good this year. Part of the team. All right, Cam's been sacked 27 times, but he's not been hit as much as he was last year, and he's been given that amount of time to be able to throw the ball, to get the ball down the field, to have the time to do what Cam does. So I really liked Andrew Norwell this year. Someone else who I think's been overlooked, probably because of his bad past, is guard Richie Incognito of Buffalo.
Yeah, amongst fans, people won't want to... Nobody wants to put a tick next to Richie Incognito, but he has been insanely good for
them. So good. I think he's flourished under Rex Ryan. Tyra Taylor has been pretty good when he's played. All right, he's got a 6-6 win-to-loss record, but 27 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. That's something to do with the offensive line as well.
And Incognito is a run-blocking guard. And Carlos Williams, we saw, unbelievable early in the season. Then when LeSean McCoy's come back, he's been brilliant as well. Yeah, Incognito is a great shout.
Yeah, Michael Oher has come in from Liam Blackburn, another Panther. He was second in fan votes for tackles.
Which is amazing that he doesn't make it in, but Michael Oher, the blind side, is not a popular choice amongst the cognoscenti of the NFL because he was so bad for the Bears.
Cognoscenti, I like that.
Thank you, buddy.
I like that. And one you came up with, Terron Armstead, offensive tackle for the New Orleans Saints, rated fourth overall amongst offensive tackles by Pro Football Focus. Are we taking what they say seriously?
Yeah, but the difference is with offensive tackles, you have to kind of take them seriously a little bit. And actually, when you break down the stats that they give, it's
well, and the impressive stat that you came up with, 3 sacks and just 9 quarterback hurries. On Drew Brees or whoever the other guy was.
Luke McCown.
That's him. And the other one, center Weston Richburg, former second round pick, has allowed just 8 quarterback pressures this season with 0 hits or sacks on quarterback Eli Manning.
That's ridiculous for a center.
That is incredible. That is the kind of thing that you would expect from someone playing for one of the sexier teams.
Yeah, that's Max Unger, that's Travis Frederick, that's that kind of level of production. In fact, who is going as a center? Frederick Khalil, Mac Pouncey. Yeah, they're all kind of big names, but yeah, I agree with you. That's a snap.
I'll quickly do special teams. Josh Brown, he's missed 1 PCA and just 4 field goals. Never seems to miss for the New York Giants.
He's my man in fantasy as
exactly.
Well.
Exactly. Shane Leckler of Houston for the punter, second to Johnny Hecker in the rankings. Need we say more? Because we can't. And return specialist.
Hashtag punters are
it's got to be Cordarrelle Patterson. I don't know how he hasn't made it.
I really like Pac-Man Jones, though.
But Patterson, he's got 993 yards returning this year.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Of 30 returns.
Who is the returner?
And he's gained a league high of 2 touchdowns, whereas Darren Sproles, you've got Darren Sproles, Tyler Lockett, and Matthew Slater from the Patriots. They also...
Matthew Slater is
sorry,
a perennial
not Matthew,
Pro Bowler.
Not Matthew Slater. He's not there as a returner. He's there as a special teamer.
Yeah.
And my special teamer, and he's been outstanding.
It has to be Jeff Janis.
Jeff Janis.
Jeff Janis has been ludicrous.
He's been unbelievable.
He had three huge special team plays in your primetime game against the Cowboys. Ridiculously good. Anyway.
If we go backwards, tight ends, it's got to be Gary Barnidge. Cal on Twitter says, scored 9 touchdowns for the Browns. That's borderline MPV performance.
You got it wrong a second time.
MVP.
There we go.
I've written it wrong. That's why. ahead of Travis Kelce, even if he is a friend of the show. He's been brilliant for the Browns, who've had an unsettled QB situation, Gary Barnidge has. And I don't think you can discount that. I think he's been great.
Great stat from Fantasy Focus. Today's episode of the Fantasy Football Focus, really good podcast, worth getting. He's had 900 yards and 9 touchdowns this season. How many tight ends had over 900 yards and over 9 touchdowns in the 2014 season?
Four?
One, Rob Gronkowski.
See, that's amazing, isn't it?
And admittedly, you know, we've got Eifert with his 12, and this has been a good year for the top end tight ends.
Well, Eifert's only got 500 yards.
Barnidge has been impressive.
Yeah, Barnidge has been great. Jordan Reed is my other tight end.
Oh, I love Jordan Reed.
With a less than stellar quarterback, Jordan Reed has been really good. He's caught 75% of passes thrown to him and has 9 touchdowns.
What's great as well is after missing the 4 games earlier this year with the concussion, he hasn't gone out again. Last season he missed 2 stretches with concussion issues, and it's a real long-term concern for Jordan Reed, but he's now put together a consistent run of games without an injury issue, despite taking big hits and everything else. Hopefully it's something that, because they kept him out for a period of the season, he's now over, because the talent is phenomenal on Jordan Reed.
Amazing. He is now what Vernon Davis should have been.
Well, Vernon Davis was 5 years ago, but Vernon Davis missed his prime because of crap quarterback play. He got one season of it where him and Kaepernick connected. Yeah, Jordan Reed's brilliant.
Wide receivers. This one person.
If Rashard Jones made me angry, this makes me livid.
This is just a few of the names that got in touch with this person. Kyle, Devin, Ben Braddock, Mike White, Alan M, Paul Hyam, Neil Dutton, Simon Clancy, you and me, everybody else, has all said one of the two Alans, Alan Robinson.
13 touchdowns!
13 touchdowns, 1,141 yards, 0 fumbles, and regularly pulls off some incredible plays. How he is not there, and Calvin Megatron is there. I want to throw this, screw this
You've
up.
You've got to finish reading.
I've got to finish reading.
All right, just to quantify all of that as well. He plays for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
With Blake Bortles.
And I have got a man crush on Blake Bortles, as we all know well. But that is f***ing ridiculous. NFL fans, f*** you.
All of you.
Please don't. Please keep listening to our podcast. Unless you listen to this podcast, then we love you.
If you voted for Calvin Megatron Johnson, then f*** you.
And you didn't vote for Alan Robinson.
Alan Robinson. I would also like to add Julian Incredelman. He is injured. Do you need to apologise to me for anything?
No.
But he was before he got injured, he was brilliant this year.
Definitely not Pro Bowl level, though.
Next. I disagree with you.
Have you got another wide receiver?
Doug Baldwin. Rob Statton. Rob Statton has said this. Now, I'm struggling for other wide receivers. Maybe you could jump in. But he has scored. He is a joint leader of 13 touchdowns so far this year.
Right, he is a joint leader.
And he's part of the Russell Wilson revolution.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the problem. He's part of this, the Russell Wilson revolution. He's got 13 touchdowns this year. But 10 of those have come in the last 3-4 games.
Yeah, that's true.
And this is, it's, the reason Doug Baldwin's not in the Pro Bowl is if he did that at the beginning of the season, he'd be guaranteed to be in the Pro Bowl. But he's done it in the last 4 weeks when Pro Bowl voting has come to a close. Eric Decker, I would like to have seen in there. He's had a great year this year. He's been really impressive.
10 touchdowns this year. Someone else who could have been in there who I think he's got 7 or 8 touchdowns this year is now injured. Alan Hearns.
Alan Robinson.
Yeah, Alan Robinson again. Two Alans.
Just Alan.
We're running back
studio for that sound drop, sorry.
D'Angelo Williams. He started on fire for the Steelers with Le'Veon out for the first 2 games. Had to step aside, but then shone again when Bell went on IA. 9 touchdowns, and 4.5 yards per carry. I think he's been brilliant this year.
It's a really difficult one at running back this year, because if you look at the guys that have got in there, and we haven't gone through this for any other position, but let's just quickly mention, and you look at the running backs that are in there, and it's a great group. Devonta Freeman, Todd Gurley, Doug Martin, LeSean McCoy, Adrian Peterson, Jonathan Stewart, all of which undoubtedly are players you could argue are worthy of a Pro Bowl space. We made you make a decision on this. And actually beyond those guys, because there's been so many injuries this year, and I count Eddie Lacy gaining 500 pounds and becoming a whale as an injury.
Becoming bigger than Mike Talbot, who made it as a fullback. In fact, perhaps Eddie Lacy should make it as a fullback.
Oh, he should play as a guard. That's where he should be playing. We definitely should be looking at this. But D'Angelo Williams is a good shout, considering the issues we've had this season. The best backup running back in the league, no doubt.
And the other one is Thomas Rawls.
Love Thomas Rawls.
Until he went out on the IA, he had racked up 840 yards at a league high. League high! No one else has rushed for any more yards than him per carry at 5.6. Totally outshining Marshawn Lynch. Thomas Rawls will be, I would say, perhaps a top 12 running back pick next year. If you're drafting your fantasy leagues next year, I think it'll be amazing.
It's going to be a lot down to whether or not they keep Marshawn Lynch about, but yeah, you've probably got a point there. Quarterback, the quarterbacks have made it: Tom Brady, Cam Newton, Carson Palmer, Ben Roethlisberger, Russell Wilson, and Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers is the one in there that I'd probably say shouldn't be. I'm sorry, buddy. And I know his individual play, he's had moments of brilliance, but with the offense they've run this year,
and the play calling hasn't been great. Perhaps he should have taken...
I know that's not all on his shoulders, but then,
if you think about who you'd replace him with, I'm not sure you'd replace him. Andy Dalton, maybe, but Dalton is still Dalton. Mike White said he's led to the Bengals to their best start in years. 106 QBR, 25 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He's looked composed and lost much of that stigma attached to him in recent years. And that is true. The other guy, who I think has had a pretty good year, and it's only because their defense sucks and they're in the NFC disgrace, Eli Manning. It pains me to say it, but he's had a pretty good year. 32 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. But would I take either of those two out of there for Aaron Rodgers? I wouldn't.
I wouldn't take Eli Manning over anyone. I think Andy Dalton, it's really harsh on him to be snubbed considering the season he's had. But we've seen some great quarterback play. I mean, Cam Newton and Russell Wilson are both guys. In fact, Russell Wilson's probably the one person who I'd say over the whole season's work might drop out for me as well, because he was bad for 8 games.
Yeah, he was.
But then he's been really good for 5 games. So it's kind of an up and down thing with him. But those were our list. And that just...
I've got a little bit of Twitter mentions.
Okay, yeah.
Jarvis Landry from Richard Walker carried the Dolphins all season, makes some unreal plays, would rival Odell when thrown to by an elite QB. Maybe. I mean, there's too many tangibles there. And Adam Fox says Delaney Walker, but it's the Pro Bowl, so who cares?
There we go. You've managed to throw it away finally. Adam Schefter is tweeting, based on everything said today, it still would be a major upset if OBJ's 1-game suspension is overturned. So we might have spent a good chunk of this podcast talking about something that's not going to happen. And we're sorry if we have, but we're going to put it out there as quickly as possible. We're not the disgrace. We are not the disgrace. Right. I think let's agree now that we're going to save back the Stefon Anthony interview till next week and ahead of those college games, because we talk so much Clemson with him. We've got a few more games we need to very quickly run through. And let's just do that quickly now. The St. Louis Rams at 6-8 travel to the Seattle Seahawks at 9-5. The position for the Seahawks is, if they can win this game, they've got a very good chance of taking that four seed and of taking that five seed, sorry, and therefore getting to travel to none other than the NFC disgrace.
Yeah.
So that's great news for Russell Wilson. Bad news for the Rams. They won't be going 8-8 this year under Jeff Fisher. This is a Seattle win.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. Can't disagree with you there.
Chargers, Raiders, this is Thursday Night Football. The most exciting thing about this is getting to watch Charles Woodson, and we've talked about that a lot already. 4-10 Chargers, 6-8 Raiders. They've been exciting this year. They've looked like a real football team, but they've fallen by the wayside. I think the Raiders win this, and maybe they've got a chance going 8-8 this year.
I think they have. I think they will win this. The Chargers haven't looked great. Amari Cooper has found his mojo again. Derek Carr needs to throw away some of those cobwebs that he gets at the beginning of the game. Latavius Murray's got the fifth and most amount of rushing yards so far this year. He's been a little unlucky to miss out on the Pro Bowl. probably not consistent enough, but I will give this to quite a convincing Oakland win.
Just to confirm, the one big thing for Oakland in this, and the one thing to watch out for more than anything else, is Khalil Mack had that phenomenal game 2 weeks ago against the Raiders. Last week, the Packers really, really kept Khalil Mack in check. One of the best offensive line performances I've seen from a team this year. The Chargers' offensive line is probably the most injured single unit in the entire NFL. Khalil Mack, go have yourself a day, boy. Dallas at Buffalo. Dallas technically still in the NFC East. They've got Kellen Moore under centre.
NFC what?
NFC disgrace. I apologise. They've got Kellen Moore in centre. Not even Kellen Moore's mum believes that Kellen Moore is going to win this game. This is a Bills home win.
Bills home win. Best rushing offence against, well, the sixth best rush, the 18th best rushing defence. That's where it's going to be won. LeSean McCoy, you go and have yourself a day.
You want a disgraceful game? Let's talk 49ers at Detroit Lions. Lions win.
Lions win.
I hate you. Indianapolis.
That's just really harsh.
Everyone involved in this game. The Indianapolis Colts at 6-8.
Me.
And still with a chance. Yeah, it's probably true.
Yeah.
And still with a chance at their very own playoff berth. Travel to the Miami Dolphins. They're 6-8. The Dolphins are 5-9. And these are two bad football teams.
Oh, terrible football
teams. I honestly
teams.
Don't know where to pick this game. I'm going to take Miami because they're at home. The one interesting thing is Lamar Miller, whenever he has a really terrible game, it seems that suddenly they go, maybe we should give him the ball more. The Colts have not been particularly good against the run this year, 25th against the rush. I'm going to take the Dolphins at home.
Who's the quarterback?
For which team?
Not for the Dolphins, it's Tannehill. Who's the quarterback for the Colts?
Maybe Hasselbeck, maybe Whitehurst, definitely not Luck.
I've picked the Dolphins.
It's an ugly
the Colts, you make me sick.
Chicago Bears at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay pretty much out of the NFC race. In fact, they technically, no, they did. They went out of it last weekend,
yep,
in fact.
They did.
This is the Lovey Smith Bowl. He spent some time with Chicago. He has not been able to end their playoff drought in the two seasons in Tampa Bay. He's probably been saved his job this year by Jameis Winston. Chicago looking better than they did early in the season. Still don't like them very much. I'll take the Bucks at home.
I'm taking the Bucks at home as well.
Although the one thing is, Chicago have a very, very good pass defense this year, allowing just 216 yards a game. That's third in the NFL. They could give Jameis some troubles.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, they could. But they were playing twice up against the Green Bay Packer wide receiving core, and I think twice. No, they've only played once against the Minnesota Viking. Yeah, they've played twice against the Minnesota Viking receiving core as well. So that those stats could be slightly inflated there.
It's
so
become a run-heavy division, undoubtedly, the NFC North. And finally, the Jacksonville Jaguars travel to the New Orleans Saints. These are 2-5-9 teams out of the playoffs, both of them respectingly. The Saints have the best passing offense in the league, though, and the Jags, an interesting passing defense. That's me being nice about them.
Very nice.
I'm going to take the Saints at home here.
I've picked too many teams to win at home, so I've gone for the Jags away.
I like that that's your thought on this, that there has to be some kind of balance.
Yes.
Brilliant. So that's our look at Week 16. Let us know what you thought of our All-Pro Pro Bowl picks, as we may be clumsily calling them. Ollie, you've seen Star Wars now.
I have.
Without spoilers,
it was
thoughts.
One of the, I think it's probably one of the best films I've seen in the last 5 years.
Yes!
I loved, and this is not a spoiler.
Let's go see it again now. I don't care that I've got work in an hour.
Let's do it. What I love is that it is, it's an homage to the first three.
I think that's unfair, because some people have taken that as a point of sagging off. Yes, it has some beats and some story points which are similar to the first three films, but I like the way it turns a lot of them on its head. I love the new characters, and I've seen it three times now, and it gets better with every watching.
I'll tell you what, actually,
the first hour and a half gets better with every watching. The last hour and a half is still the exciting thrill ride it is anyway, but the first hour and a half is just gets better and better every time I watch. The relationships, particularly Daisy Ridley's character with everyone else.
By the way, don't you just love her?
Adore her. She's phenomenal in this. Love it, love it, love it.
What I love as well is that in the first three, most of the sort of the aliens or the non-humanoid sort of characters were done with special effects and stuff. Visual effects. Well, this is all special effects. You've got kind of masks on things, and you've got harking back to that scene on Tatooine where they go into the bar. I love loads of it. I loved this movie. I'm starting to think about it, and it's making me feel like sad that I won't get to watch it again for a while. I just love it.
Look, there's probably going to be some showings still on right now. So why don't you go out and try and watch it again right now? And then we'll talk about it again on the next podcast and keep talking about it over and over and over again. The other question we had asked was, what's our favourite Christmas movie? And mine, is that you opening my Christmas card to you?
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, mate.
I'd like you to read it out live on the podcast.
Yeah, sure. Merry Xmas, you beautiful little hobo. Love, Will and Sarah, XXX.
You are a beautiful little hobo, my friend.
Thanks, mate.
Merry Christmas, buddy. Merry Christmas to everyone listening at home. Thank you for listening to the show all of this first 3 or 4 months since we've become the Gridiron Show. We didn't do a big fanfare for our 50th episode a couple of weeks ago, but we really appreciate...
We had 50 episodes.
Yeah, we've gone past 50. We're at 52 now.
Wow.
So thank you to everyone that's got in touch with us. Thank you to everyone who continues to enjoy it. And in ode to my favourite Christmas movie, quickly, Ollie, what's yours?
I quite like Bad Santa.
What? That's your favourite Christmas movie?
Home Alone?
You might be... Well, Home Alone's a good choice. I like Home Alone as a choice. Yeah. But clearly, the best Christmas movie...
Elf?
...is Die Hard. And so, in ode to Die Hard, let's roll this thing out with the song that ends Die Hard. The brilliant...
Family Guy. The weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
The situation in the Pacific is worse than reported.
The Japanese are planning something big.
What's the target?
Midway.
From the director of Independence Day.
A couple dozen planes. It's all Japanese fleet.
We got the order to launch!
Discover the incredible true story.
Today we're going to be underdogs.
Of the World War II battle.
Good luck, boys.
Fire!
Midway. Download and keep now.